When you make decisions for your company, you always look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing and shipping to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your process to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, books, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart if you sell online. Schedule package pickups through the dashboard and automatically see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are, even on the go. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other business decision makers with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus free postage, and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Welcome to Owl Post as it is freshly delivered this week. I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and with me as she is every single week, the recently Comic-Con'd Drea Kaufman.
Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good.
Man, it has been a busy few weeks. We're not going to lie.
It sure has.
If you're listening to this in real time, you'll notice we missed a week. It's been busy. So we are sorry we missed it, but you know, there's just things that happen. So
both of us were traveling separately, and then my husband was traveling, and it just got to be super full, super fast.
Yep. It just happens. But we're excited because we were talking about before we started recording the fact that we've got chapter 27 this week, The Centaur and the Sneak, and, there are 11 chapters after this. Everything is going to happen now. We're really going to just start snowballing to the end of the series, at the end of this story. So, super excited for everyone, and for us, because I don't know about you, Dre, but I was reading these chapters, and I was just, like, so caught up. I just wanted to keep going. So, yeah, we're at that point where, like, I just want to get to the end again, so.
Yeah, definitely. I had to fight the temptation to, like, keep on reading.
Yeah, it's awesome, though. I love that she does that to us. So, before we get into everything, of course, you can find us wherever you get your podcasts. Apple Podcasts or iTunes is a great place to go, though. And if you're there, give us a starring review. Let us know what you think of the show and let others know what you think of the show. You can also find us wherever you get your podcasts, though, so you don't have to be an Apple user. We're everywhere podcasts are gotten by people these days. You can also find us on Twitter at Join Nerd Party, Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty, where you can see all the things that we're doing Nerd Party-wise. So make sure you like us there and follow us on Twitter, and check out the website at TheNerdParty.com, where you can also send us an email over on the contact section, which is TheNerdParty.com/contact. Choose Owl Post, and then that email comes to Drea and I. So this is a really interesting beginning to the chapter, Drea, because I would say I forgot about this part because this is not something we go into in the movie. About Ferenz being, you know, the new divination teacher. And I was actually shocked at the racism that Hermione shows at the beginning of this chapter. She is very dismissive of Ferenz in a way that you don't expect to come from Hermione. But it was like, oh man, what I love about this book is that nobody is kind of safe from this kind of examination, and that even our heroes like Hermione, who we've kind of held up in high regard, have issues that they need to work through and things that they might not even realize, because it's kind of shocking. I mean, she calls him a horse and basically dismisses him, the fact that she says, oh, well, he's still got four legs. I'm like, that is awful.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't really understand, and maybe and hopefully we'll get some more information and a little closure on that, because I don't really understand that her, it doesn't really fit her character. Like, she doesn't have, like, she's got this big push for the, you know, the equality of magical creatures, but she totally writes one off for really no good reason other than he's the divination teacher and she's not a fan of divination. Like, I don't really understand, especially because she should know that a centaur saved Harry a couple of books ago. Like, it's just, it's so out of character and kind of out of the blue. I don't really know the intent behind it. And I kind of hope we get some of that information kind of as we progress through the next book or two. But yeah, I was very unexpected to have that come from her. Like, I could see that come from Ron. I could see that come from one of the other maybe tertiary characters. But yeah, I didn't expect it from her at all.
You know, the thing that I kind of thought about this was that this goes to show just how deep-seated the wizarding world, you know, attitudes towards magical creatures can be. And that the fact that, you know, Hermione's quest to save the house elves from enslavement, right? It's good, but also we've seen that Hermione doesn't really truly understand house elves in this. And so,
yeah, but the same thing, like, she wants them to be treated as equals. She doesn't understand them or how to do that or how to achieve that for them, or that they don't even really want that. But she doesn't seem to apply that same logic to other magical creatures, which is strange. For someone with kind of her depth of intelligence, mm-hmm. you'd think she'd be like, all magical creatures should be treated equal, not just this subsect of magical creatures. So I don't, I mean, maybe we'll learn a little later in this chapter that, and get the impression as we sort of learn more about our experience with friends that they sort of think of humans as less than them. And maybe that's what she's picked up and is sort of mirroring, right? Is that the arrogance that magical creature has, against humans, and maybe that's where that's coming from. That's kind of the only thing I can justify, but I just found it very out of character and surprising for it to be her to have that reaction.
See, I think the thing that I was thinking, though, with regards to the whole magical creature issue and the way that she deals with house elves, is that there's kind of this savior complex that I feel like maybe that she has in that sense. Like, we don't necessarily see that she sees them as equals. She sees it as her job to free them. And that doesn't necessarily mean equality in the same way. Does that make sense? And so that's where I was trying to, what you were saying, like, I'm trying to fit this in with Hermione's character. And so I wonder if this is just one of those areas where she hasn't quite put it all together. Like, you know, people are very good at being, you know, disconnected intellectually. And mm-hmm. and this is one of those areas where I think there's an intellectual disconnect with Hermione and her stances in other places. But here, it's like, you know, because prejudice against anything is irrational anyway, right? Mm-hmm. You know, so this is one of those places where it just kind of seems to be irrational. I think you also hit on something, a couple of things. One, she doesn't like divination. Two, I think she has picked up on the fact that centaurs don't really see humans as, you know, intelligent beings. And that is supported by the fact of the way that Ferenc teaches the class that we're about to have with him. He's very much like that, you know. He does kind of disregard humans in some ways, and he sees them not necessarily as lesser beings, but he doesn't necessarily think that they're the most intelligent species either. So there's mm-hmm. what I love about this is that there's this recurring thing throughout this book of people kind of cloistering in little groups and having an idea of a certain subsect without necessarily having tons and tons of interaction with them. And that just creates a sense of fear and mistrust then with these characters that wouldn't necessarily be there if they found a way to actually come together and have conversations with each other and really truly get to know each other. And that's something that I think she kind of slowly expands on throughout the series. And that's part of the big thing in this book. I mean, I think that's the reason we had the giant inclusion, now that I think about it, earlier in the series, in this book, you know, is that we're trying to break down those barriers, because those barriers that we've artificially put up between ourselves and other beings is what's hurting us, not helping us. And this is just kind of one of those areas where we see that come to light through a character and through a couple of characters that we might not think of. It's a really interesting beginning to this chapter.
For sure. And then we get to go to the class and see kind of what it's like for ourselves. And what's interesting is you get the impression that Ferenc has sort of a mild version of this thought on humans, right? Like, he seems to sort of give them the benefit of the doubt and doesn't really feel maliciously about them. But we kind of get the impression that, like, that's a very mild version of this culture of centaurs, right? Like, that others don't, like, that basically we are, like, humans and wizards are dead to them. Like, they are so insignificant that, like, they are, like, they completely disregard them, and that he at least sort of acknowledges them and wants to help them, but still kind of thinks that they're dumb or less than or whatever.
Well, and you can see this struggle because the kids are trying to kind of understand things, right? And, you know, he mentions the fact that, you know, because of his agreeing to help Dumbledore, he's been expelled. He's been excommunicated from his herd, and everybody kind of like hears that word. And Harry even thinks when Lavender says that he knows she's thinking of cows. Like, he realizes this isn't how, Harry's the one who realizes this isn't how all this works, because he's met the centaurs before. And then Dean asks this incredulous question of, oh, did Hagrid breed you like Thestrals? And he says, you know, look, centaurs are not servants or playthings for humans. Mm-hmm. And he just kind of leaves it at that. And like you said, Ferenc seems to be the most forward-thinking of the centaurs, because he is willing to help humans. He's willing to break down those barriers, and he's willing to think of the greater good. And part of that, I think, becomes what I think was so interesting is that when he's telling this lesson, he starts expounding on the fact that centaurs think that the world is in this space between two wars. We know the war he's talking about now, because we've seen parts of it in Fantastic Beasts with Grindelwald. And now, of course, the other war that's about to break fully loose by the end of this book, which is with Voldemort. And so you can see that, you know, Ferenc feels that it's his place to transcend cultural boundaries between centaurs and humans, because those boundaries are about to mean nothing, because they're about to come into a war, which, if Voldemort wins, is going to be very bad. And he realizes, I feel like, that for the centaurs. So,
well,
there's so much depth here.
If a war breaks out, it doesn't matter if you're a wizard or centaur or giant or whatever. Like, the world is going to change for you. And I think he's able to see that and appreciate and understand that and see the value in not putting your head down and ignoring it. So I think that is what makes him, what you were saying, like, forward thinking and a little bit different and a little more understanding than some of the other centaurs. And even just the sort of patience with which he answers Dean or Seamus's question shows that he is making sacrifices here, right? And that a normal centaur probably would have, like, flown off the handle for a question like that. And he kind of was like, well, it's coming from a place of ignorance, but it's not malicious, you know?
Right, right. Yeah. No, I 100% agree. I think there's a real beauty to that. with the way that Friends deals with this. But it's also an interesting thing because, you know, he totally disregards most of what Trelawney has to say about this all, right? Because he's trying to point out to them, you know, the way that centaurs view the idea of reading the stars has nothing to do with this, like, really personal application. It comes about this idea of that centaurs have kind of realized their place in the universe and that they are just a small speck in the larger, you know, galaxy of it all, and that the movements of history and everything is what they're looking for, the movements of when evil is arising and when it's falling and all those kind of things. So it's not really about them, it's about the larger scope of things and how so many times we as humans make things about ourselves. And that's where the whole idea of, like, kind of like fortune telling and stuff comes from, because we want to know the future for us, not for, you know, the rest of, you know, the world or the galaxy or whatever. And so there's just this, I think in many ways, you know, there's kind of a bit of a, this is where you can see the centaurs actually have a greater understanding of this, because it's not self-focused, it's beyond the self. And that is a transcendent way to look at things and a better way to look at things. So yeah, just really, I think, very deep beginning to this chapter.
Well, and it's really interesting too to watch Lavender and Pavarti, who were so excited to take this class again. And that was, you know, divination was like their favorite topic, kind of see their world shaken up a little bit, because now it's very different than what they'd learned and what they thought it was and how they applied it. And so that was interesting too, to kind of see the impact that that had on some other characters besides like Ron, Hermione, and Harry.
I do love that Friends has a message for Hagrid about how that whatever Hagrid's been working on is not working, and that he would do best to abandon it, and that he's basically also angering the centaurs that still live in the forest, so beware. And I love that Harry's having a really hard time kind of getting this message to him, because Umbridge has been, you know, hawkishly watching each of the Care of Magical Creatures class, and he's finally able to do it. And Hagrid just won't have any of it. He's like, look, it's going fine. Friends is great, but he doesn't know what he's talking about. And there's more important things than me keeping my job, which is a fascinating, like, key that there's something really important going on with Hagrid that we have very little idea about at this moment, which I'm really excited to kind of get to in the rest of the book.
Well, and it's sort of insinuated that it's larger than Hagrid. So it'll be interesting for us to find out what that is and how that makes a difference, because as so far, everything that's kind of larger than themselves have been about this battle against Voldemort and that rise and kind of preventing the war we just talked about, right? And so it's sort of eerily reminiscent of that, and it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out.
Well, I do kind of love that they are really enjoying their defensive against the Dark Arts lessons, you know, their Dumbledore's Army lessons that they've been doing, and they've gotten to Patronuses, which is fun to see them all trying to produce their Patronuses, and the ones that can and the ones that can't, which is really interesting. And it just it's a really fun scene, but it kind of goes south pretty quickly, because Dobby shows up and is having a really hard time telling Harry Potter, because he's not supposed to, but he's fighting through it, that Umbridge is coming, and everybody just scatters. And yeah, it goes, it pretty much everything goes to hell in a handbasket like that.
It's very different than how it plays out in the movie. The movie is kind of very dramatic in their discovery, and in this case, Dobby. And I love that Harry kind of tells Dobby, like, go back to the kitchen, don't tell anyone you told us, and don't hurt yourself. Like, you have to lie, and this is like an order, right? He knows exactly how to help Dobby, right? And then, you know, that's kind of the end of the super dramatic, you know, they all kind of run and Harry just gets caught.
Well, yeah, absolutely. It doesn't have quite the same
theatrical
flair. Yeah, it's exactly. And you know what plays out next is very different as well, because the scene that's going to go down in Dumbledore's office has a lot more subtext to it, you know, as they ask what, you know, Harry is been doing there, and he wants to immediately just say, yes, I know why I'm here. I know why you call me here. And Dumbledore subtly gives him the like shake of the head, like don't say it. Yes. And he's like, no. And then we go through this whole thing, which watching Dumbledore work is masterful here. Like, because he's able to weave in and out of the rules that have been created perfectly. And it's so awesome. Like, I just really enjoy the way that Dumbledore uses all of the little nuances of legality here to get themselves out of this. It's great.
Well, and to start with, this is, if you've watched, only seen the movie, it's very different from the movie in that Cho is not the one who tells Umbridge, which is what happens in the movie, because that's a character we already know and they didn't want to introduce another character. So it is what it is. In this case, it's Marietta, who's a friend of Cho's, who spills the beans and ends up with that nasty hex on her face, like Hermione had done. It says sneak on her forehead, and it seems to really be disturbing her. And I love that at some point in this process, you know, they're like, well, can't you take that jinx off? And Umbridge is like, we're trying. We can't figure out how. And I love that Harry, like, has this moment where he instantly kind of surged with pride about Hermione's jinxing skills, right? Which I think is cute, because it goes along the lines of that whole teacher thing, right? Like, they're learning Defense Against the Dark Arts and someone's very successful, and he has this surge of like, oh, I'm so proud of them. But yeah, it's very different, very intense. And it is, I think, watching Dumbledore or reading Dumbledore work is just like, you get why he is where he is and who he is now. Like, it's
right.
Calm, and he's got the little smile, and you know, we see Umbridge sort of lose control at some point, and like, he knows that he's got the upper hand.
I love that, you know, the first legality is saying, look, we know that they met in October, which is before the decree came out that they couldn't have groups. And so the whole thing becomes, well, have they met since then? And not only that, but we get this scene where the reason they know they met there is because there's this character, Willie Wendershins, who was there in the Hog's Head, and we see Minerva speak up too, where she says, oh, I see, that's why, you know, he wasn't arrested for the regurgitating toilets, which plays back to something we saw earlier in the book. So interesting how our justice system works. So we're seeing that there's this miscarriage of justice happening everywhere, and the idea of Dumbledore saying too that this is all his idea, that they hadn't met since then, but there was supposed to be this meeting tonight where he was going to see who was interested in this, and there's this whole little side thing that we find out once Dumbledore kind of like knocks everybody out, that Kingsley has modified the little girl's memory, Marita, so that she won't remember that there have been other Defense Against the Dumbledore's Army meetings, only the one. And so it's just so cool to watch all of these people work together and make it work, like, in this moment. It's really fantastic.
Well, it goes back to that everyone kind of needs to work towards the greater good, right? Like, Dumbledore sacrificing himself now because he knows that Harry needs to stay free and McGonagall needs to stay in the school, and that, you know, he'll just have to think outside the box and do something different. And so, you know, it's just, it's very interesting how the whole thing plays out, and how it has a much greater level of intensity than it does in the movie. Like, it has this gravitas to it that, you know, this is a big deal, and that, you know, this is things happening. This is things kicking off. They're all prepared for it. You know, all the teachers or adults in this case are prepared for this and are willing to do what's necessary. And I love that when Dumbledore touches Harry, he again gets that surge of like pain and anger the second that Dumbledore touches him.
Yes. Yeah, that was really, really interesting too. Because and what's fascinating too here to see is that, you know, Fudge is so excited. He's so excited. He thought he was going to get Potter. Here he feels like he's going to get Dumbledore. Dumbledore knocks everybody out. He's talking to Harry and Minerva. He's telling them, look, this is what needs to happen. He says, Harry, you need to study your occlumency. You need to focus on this. You need to make sure you close your mind. He's telling Minerva to take care of the school. I love the fact that, you know, a lot of people were frustrated, you know, with the timetable change of Minerva being in the Crimes of Grindelwald. But there's something about that now, seeing that their relationship has happened for so long, that really makes these scenes even more important. And like you said, he touches Harry in that moment, and Harry just kind of wants to react. But before Harry can truly react, he grabs Fox's tail and just like disappears. And it's so great. It's so great. And then the line from the movie that they gave to Kingsley is even funnier, coming from a Phineas, one of the portraits, where he's like, yeah. I might disagree with Dumbledore on many counts, but you can't deny he's got style.
For sure.
Yeah, I just, I love the way that this one ends, like, and it does kind of leave us on a cliffhanger that will, you know, lead right into the next chapter, which I can't wait to get to, because we're also going to get to learn about Snape's worst memory. But Drea, so glad for everyone. Yeah, we're back. We're excited to be here. But if anybody, you know, wants to catch up with you, talk about anything Harry Potter or anything else, where can they find you there on the interwebs?
Sure, you can find me on Twitter at PCFJick or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's Kaufman.
And you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd under the name MattRushing02. I'm here on the network doing aggressive negotiations with John Mills, talking about Star Wars each and every week. You can find me on the Trek FM network doing two shows. One's called The Orb with Chris Jones, talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. You can also find me doing the 602 Club with my friend Christy, which is so much fun, as we're talking about all the fandoms we love. It's the general geek show, so I hope you'll check that out. And then last but not least, you can also find me doing cinema stories, as I talk with my friend Courtney all about films, but through the lens of faith. Thank you, though, so much for checking your Owl Post.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com, and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere, and each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.